Happy Halloween episode!
Yay.
Yay. Laura, what are you?
Oh, Sister Laura, to you. Thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not Mother Superior, Laura?
I mean, I am superior, but...
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How's it going, Carrie? What are you?
I am a voodoo priestess. Mm. See the hand?
I love it.
It's for my last co-host.
Right.
Just kidding, Archie. Yes, happy Halloween episode. Are we excited?
I'm excited.
I'm excited, too. I'm a little warm in all of this, but... And I'm going to be washing makeup off my face for days, but... Yeah.
This is true. It looks great, though.
Thank you. You look so great, too. You look so great, too. I was like... She called me, and she was like, I got my costume. And it wasn't what you had been talking about most of the year.
I just happened to see this, and I was like, that's perfect.
It is perfect, yeah. It is perfect. So I chose a church background with Latin writing over the door for you tonight.
Thank you. Yeah. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. Yeah, I don't...
We're kind of the opposite.
We kind of are, right?
A little bit.
I don't have any EVPs. I do have a necklace that's choking the life out of me.
Sorry, my glasses are like, I have too many things in my head now. There's too much going on.
It's way too much going on. My headphones are back here. It's a lot. Yeah, I don't have any EVPs. Do you have anything?
Nothing.
Oh, wait, I lied. This is coming out October 30th, so our next hoodie presale is starting in 2 days, so on Monday, for those of you that are listening. The minute the episode drops, November 1st, we are going to be doing another hoodie presale. So $45 and $5 shipping, and if you buy two or more, you get free shipping, and Patreons, as always, get 20% off. So, yay. It was really successful. I'm very proud and excited. So that's all I had. Yeah.
And even more people wanted to do it. So here we are doing it again.
We're doing it again. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought that was really great.
Super cool.
Okay. Well, let's just go get right into it.
Let's do it.
Laura chose a very perfect topic for us to cover tonight, today, this holiday holiday season? Wow. This holiday season? The history of Halloween. Which...
Yes.
Duh. So, Laura, why don't you go ahead and get on into it?
All right. So let's start off with my sources. 247wallstreet.com, thecoolest.com, history.com, worldhistory.org, livescience.com, and countryliving.com.
Country, you know. Country Living. That's like the magazine.
I'm guessing. Yeah, that's what I was laughing at too.
I was like, oh, all right. I didn't know that they were foremost experts on the history of Halloween.
Apparently, in the country, they are.
Oh, well, you know, after the Great Amherst Mystery, that country, they need some experts on scary, spooky season of the dead.
They really do.
Mm.
All right,
let's do it.
So, everybody knows that Halloween takes place the last day of October. The word itself literally means hallowed evening, and was previously known to early European celebrators as All Hallows' Eve. All Hallows' Eve, which was October 31st, and All Saints' Day, November 1st, both paid homage to saints. Then Hallows means saints. Okay. The name was eventually shortened to Halloween, which is what we know and love to this day. Halloween falls on October 31st because the ancient Gaelic festival of Samhain, which is spelled S-A-M-H-A-I-N, very different.
Samhain, yeah. Like, I've been saying it Samhain forever.
Me too. So Samhain.
Dead wrong. Oh, get it? Dead wrong.
Oh. All right. The Samhain is considered the earliest known root of Halloween. And that is when that occurred. Because ancient records are sparse and fragmentary, the exact nature of Samhain is not fully understood. But we know it was an annual communal meeting at the end of the harvest year. It was a time to gather resources for the winter months and to bring the animals back from the pastures. Samhain is also thought to have been a time of communing with the dead. So there was a belief that it was a day when spirits of the dead could cross over into the other world. Hmm. Such moments of transition in the year have always been thought to be special and supernatural. During this festival, people were known to wear costumes to ward off those ghosts. This belief is also shared by lots of other cultures, and a similar idea is mentioned around the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur, which also typically occurs in October and involves saying prayers for the dead.
That's really interesting. I never knew that. I'm not too well-versed on Judaism and their traditions, aside from, obviously, Hanukkah, and, you know, but that's really cool. I like that. That's cool.
Yeah. So Pope Boniface IV had set the 13th of May as All Saints' Day originally, which was a feast day to celebrate the saints who did not have a day of their own. In the 7th century, when he consecrated the great pagan temple of the Pantheon in Rome to St. Mary and the Christian martyrs. But in the 8th century, Pope Gregory III moved the date to the feast, moved the date of the feast to the November 1st, oops. Which I think was to consolidate some of the pagan, traditions in closer to the Catholic ones. Which was done all through Catholicism to, you know, when they mixed with the Romans, right?
Right.
Okay. So the tradition of dressing in costumes and trick-or-treating may go back to the practice of mumming and guising, in which people would disguise themselves and go door-to-door asking for food. Early costumes were usually disguises, often woven out of straw, and sometimes people wore costumes to perform in plays or skits.
Okay.
The practice may also be related to the medieval custom of souling in Britain and Ireland, when poor people would knock on doors on Hallowmas, November 1st, asking for food in exchange for prayers for the dead.
Wow, okay.
Trick-or-treating didn't start in the United States until World War II, but American kids were known to go out on Thanksgiving and ask for food, a practice that was known as Thanksgiving begging.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I didn't know about that either.
I didn't know about a lot of this, actually, but I've always wondered, but never.
Yeah, it's really, I mean, and there's so much more to this, too, especially with the pagan stuff, but
right.
It's just, yeah, very long ancient history. Apples are also associated with Halloween, both as a treat and then the game of bobbing for apples, a game that since the colonial era in America was used for fortune telling. Legend has it that the first person to pluck an apple from the water-filled bucket without using his or her hands would be the first to marry.
Oh.
Did you ever do that as a kid, the bobbing for apples?
We did in elementary school. At our class Halloween party. Mm-hmm. I was terrible at it. The apple would always, bob away, or I'd bite down, and it would just fall, go to the bottom. I was terrible at it.
So apples were also used as another way of marriage prophecy. According to legend, on Halloween, and sometimes at the stroke of midnight, young women would peel an apple into one continuous strip and throw it over her shoulder. The apple skin would supposedly land in the shape of the first letter of the future husband's name.
Oh, wow. That's cool. Wait a minute. Hang on. I'm having a memory.
Did you find an apple skin that later became something?
No, actually, I think it was an episode of Charmed that they did this in, I think.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I think so. I was like, when you said the apple skin formed the initial, I was like, wait a minute, hang on. Yeah. I think it was an episode of Charmed. Listeners, let us know. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
Another Halloween ritual involved looking in a mirror at midnight by candlelight, for a future husband's face was said to appear. A scary version of this later became the Bloody Mary ritual, familiar to many of us school kids.
I
remember doing that.
Definitely. Definitely played that.
Bloody Mary.
Yeah, right along with light as a feather, stiff as a board at slumber parties. Yeah. The 80s.
Right. So fun. All so the slumber fun. Parties.
Right.
Between the Ouija boards and the weird rituals, it was super fun.
I didn't say they were the smartest decade.
Right.
But they were fun. They were fun.
It was fun. As for modern Halloween, Halloween beliefs and customs were brought to Northern America with the earliest Irish immigrants. Then, by the great waves of Irish immigrants fleeing the famines of the first half of the 19th century, known in the North American continent since colonial days, by the middle of the 20th century, Halloween had become largely a children's holiday. Since that time, the holiday's popularity has increased dramatically as adults, communities, and institutions have embraced the event.
I love it. It's my favorite.
I know. I love Halloween too.
Christmas and then Halloween, are my two favorite holidays. I love them.
Through the ages, various supernatural entities, including fairies and witches, came to be associated with Halloween. And more than a century ago in Ireland, the event was said to be a time when spirits of the dead could return to their old haunting grounds. Dressing up as ghosts or witches became fashionable, though as the holiday became more widespread and more commercialized, and with the arrival of mass manufactured costumes, the selection of disguises for kids and adults greatly expanded beyond monsters to include everything from superheroes to princesses to politicians.
To voodoo queens to nuns.
Right, exactly. It can be anything you want.
Anything. Also the glare in my teeth. It's not makeup, guys. It's just the green screen. Sorry. I'll sit back.
Sure. Another institution of Halloween is the jack-o'-lantern.
Oh, yes.
Right? And I love decorating pumpkins. I'm actually really excited to do it.
Me too. I really do love it.
I do too. So the practice of decorating jack-o'-lanterns originated in Ireland, where large turnips and potatoes served as early canvases. In fact, the name Jack-o'-lantern comes from an Irish folktale about a man named Stingy Jack. Stingy Jack. So here's the legend of Stingy Jack. According to the story, Stingy Jack invited the devil to have a drink with him. True to his name, Stingy Jack didn't want to pay for his drink, so he convinced the devil to turn himself into a coin that Jack could use to buy their drinks. Once the devil did so, Jack decided to keep the money and put it into his pocket next to a silver cross, which prevented the devil from changing back into his original form. Jack eventually freed the devil under the condition that he would not bother Jack for 1 year, and that should Jack die, he would not claim his soul. The next year, Jack again tricked the devil into climbing into a tree to pick a piece of fruit. Obviously, the devil was a little bit not so smart.
A little thick.
Right, a little bit thick. While he was up in the tree, Jack carved a sign of the cross into the tree's bark so that the devil could not come down until the devil promised Jack not to bother him for 10 more years. Soon after, Jack died. As the legend goes, God would not allow such an unsavory figure into heaven. The devil, upset by the trick Jack had played on him and keeping his word not to claim his soul, would not allow Jack into hell. So he sent Jack off into the dark night with only a burning coal to light his way. Jack put the coal into a carved-out turnip and has been roaming the earth with it ever since. The Irish began to refer to this ghostly figure as Jack of the Lantern, and then simply Jack O'Lantern.
Okay.
Right? So in Ireland and Scotland, people began to make their own versions of Jack's lanterns by carving scary faces into turnips or potatoes and placing them into windows or near doors to frighten away Stingy Jack and other wandering evil spirits. In England, they did use large beets as well. Immigrants from these countries brought the jack-o'-lantern tradition with them when they came to the United States. They soon found that pumpkins, a fruit native to America, made the perfect jack-o'-lanterns.
I didn't know the pumpkin was native to America. Did you know that?
I did not.
God, you are just educating us all over the place tonight.
So many things.
I mean, Sister Laura, thank you.
No, you're very welcome. So Halloween and or other festivals honoring the dead are found pretty much everywhere on the planet in every culture.
Yeah.
In China, there's the Feast of the Hungry Ghosts, which also takes place around Halloween. Hmm. Bonfires and lanterns are lit to guide dead relatives that return to the world. And food is placed in front of their portraits so they can fatten up before winter.
Oh, I love that.
I know, I think that's great. In Austria, they don't really go all out for the dead, instead spending a week leaving a light on all night and putting out bread and water for the spirits of their dearly departed. Okay. This goes on for the entirety of All Saints Week, beginning on October 30th, and ending with the whole country going out to feed Austrian ducks stale bread, because the dead much prefer cake and alcohol.
I mean, I'm going to.
I do. So do the living. Just
it's not. Oh, okay.
It's not just them. In Germany, on All Saints Day, on November 1st, the Germans do go to the graves of their relatives. But throughout the week surrounding the day, they will keep knives hidden away so they don't accidentally injure any ghosts. It's kind of a strange tradition. In Bolivia,
I have so many questions about that.
I know the knives one is kind of fun.
It's kind of, yeah, they're ghosts. Yeah. How are you going
to... Just accidents. Accidents happen. You gotta be careful with knives.
I suppose, unless they thought a ghost was somebody living. I have so many questions.
Right. Bolivians observe the Fiesta de la Natitas on November 8th each year by decorating skulls. However, they're real ones. Either from deceased family members or obtained from medical schools or old cemeteries. They decorate them with flowers, jewelry, hats, glasses. The skulls are called Natitas, which means roughly the little pug-nosed ones.
Because of the... I get it.
Yeah, yeah. They don't have a nose. The festival has roots in pre-Columbian times. And finally, the most famous Halloween tradition that is that of the Mexican Day of the Dead. Whole shrines are constructed to the dead with many honorary tributes and prayers being offered up along with the feasting and remembrance of those who have passed on. It does take place November 2nd after the Dia de los Inocentes, which is on November 1st. And that is your history of Halloween.
Is the history of Halloween. Great job. I didn't know any of it.
No? None of it?
No, I didn't. I didn't know how trick-or-treating came to be, the jack-o'-lantern, costumes, any of that stuff. Like, I just was like, I love Halloween. It's the best holiday ever. Mm-hmm. And... Yeah, it is. In the paranormal community, it is believed to be the night when the veil between the living and the dead is at its thinnest. So last Halloween, I was in Arizona, and I did a paranormal investigation with a group of folks down at the Phelps Dodge Hospital.
I remember that.
And we did have, it was really active. It was really, really active that night, which we were all hoping that it would be. But yeah, it's, I love Halloween. It's amazing. And sorry, guys, I keep screwing with my headphones because they're here behind my wig and my hat. And
I know. I have the same problem. It's like too much stuff is happening right here.
There's, yeah, I, yeah. It's
on my head.
Right. It's a lot. So, yeah, let's take a look at some of these costumes you were talking about made of, like, straw. And I'm gonna tell you what, Laura, there.
Woof. Freaky.
Super freaky. So, here's... I've had a bunch, too. So, here's the first set.
All right. Ooh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So... You can see they would, like, make them, like, out of bags and just kind of cut holes in them.
Uh-huh.
Some of them are paper mache masks.
They kind of remind me of the old, like, doctor's plague masks.
Yeah.
Like, the one on the right.
The clown one. That's what it was, the doctor's plague mask. When I saw that, I showed my mom. And I'm like, oh, my God, look at this. It's so creepy. Yes, that's exactly what that looked like. Or the Guy Fawkes mask.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Regardless, it's not great.
Mm-hmm.
They all look like creepy killers. I mean,
mm-hmm. They really do.
They really do. Here's the next batch.
Hmm. Uh-huh. They just keep getting better.
They keep getting better. What is with the baby skull on the little kid with horns?
I don't know, but it's awesome. I mean, if I saw any of these today, it would be by far the scariest fucking costume.
1,000%. Look at those fucking clowns or whatever that is.
Right? No matter how realistic ours are now, like, fucking fucked up shit.
Seriously. What is that? Is that a nose? Is that a beak on that kid?
Dude, I don't know. It looks real fucking weird.
It's terrible. It's awful. And then, I don't know, is that a creepy cat? Is that, I don't.
The weird fucking clowns or whatever the fuck that is?
I don't love that at all. It's awful. And the baby skull is, that's a real skull. That looks horrible. On a baby.
On a baby?
Yes, that baby has two skulls. Yes. Oh, my God. And then the weirdest one I found here, the weirdest two. Mm. So the one with the spoons, won't you come and spoon with me? No, thank you.
That's weird.
No, thank you. And then the guy to the right or left, depending on
my... A side of bacon?
Yes, he is a side of bacon. This actually took, as the article says, first prize of 40 guineas at the Covent Garden Fancy Dress Ball in April 1894.
Awesome.
Yeah. So Halloween costumes, like you said, were kind of nine kinds of fucked up. You didn't put it in those unsavory terms, but you are a nun.
And you're not wrong.
Right.
They are pretty fucked up.
They are pretty fucked up. And then you did also mention... once, you know, mass marketing came around and they had done like the plastic masks and you could be superheroes, mm-hmm. you could be. So I added this picture to the bit as well. These are 80s costumes. And that is
love it.
Me as Wonder Woman and my friend Sean, who went as Casper the Friendly Ghost. Nice. My mom and I were looking at this picture, and I was like, Casper doesn't really look that friendly. I don't remember. That actually looks kind of terrifying.
Those were, like, the worst costumes ever, because they were, like, one-size-fits-all weird plastic mask that never fit properly.
That cut into your eyes and your lips.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then with your plastic... garbage bag type fabric little pullover.
Yes. Oh that,
but I loved them. They were so great. Like they'd have them. I remember they would be like at the grocery store.
Yes. And they had them in every, they were, one year I was Strawberry Shortcake. One year I was Batgirl. Mm-hmm. One year I was, they, it was the costume to have. But it would stick to your ass. Yes. It would stick to your ass. You'd sweat so profusely in the mask. Mm-hmm. It was pretty miserable. It had a tiny little slit for a mouth and two little nose holes. Right. But it was, everybody had one of those costumes. Everybody.
Yeah.
They were so great. Yeah, that's what we all wore. See,
the thing for you is you were probably hot when I grew up in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, we were cold as shit, and you didn't want to, like, have to put on a jacket over your costume.
And hide your costume.
Ruins it, of course.
Right, yeah.
As you're freezing.
Oh, yeah. It was terrible. Like, to just, you know, because you're running around, especially in Arizona, where it's still in the 80s, you know, we'd go trick-or-treating. Depending on the year. Depending mm-hmm. on the year. It's gotten hotter on Halloween over the years, but excuse me. Hold on. My hair is in my way. Oh, wait. Sorry. So much hair.
Right, so much
hair. I'm not used to this much hair. Also, my headphones are falling. Sorry, guys. Oh, yeah. They're falling.
I keep
again.
Like leaning on my
habit.
Veil thing. Yeah.
My veil.
I can't quite get situated. All
right. Yeah. So it was. That Halloween in the 80s was. If you were a child, a really great time to be alive. I'm going to talk a little bit in my part about how, as a parent, it was a night of utter anxiety. We are going to get into my portion of the show. When we come back, we will be right back. We're going to take a quick little break. Again, we're looking for sponsors. So if you want to sponsor the show, come on over and sponsor us. And then we'll say after this word from our sponsor. But hold on. We'll just be right back. Okay. Hi, guys. We're back. Woo. Woo. Okay.
Finally.
Phew. Good Lord. Wait, hang on.
I'm gonna pick what are you doing over there?
I'm gonna pick an easier costume next year.
May I suggest a habit, but not with all this stuff on my head. It's kind of like, I keep leaning on it and get stuck and pulled on it. It's just a mess. I thought this would be fairly simple.
Yeah. Me too. Also, like, the wig is itchy. It's a thing. But I love it, and I love how I look in it. I look amazing.
Yeah, you look great.
And awesome. Mom's like, I just look amazing. My mom's like, are you going to wear this on Halloween and hand out candy? And I was like, absolutely not. You know how long this makeup took me? Like, I'm good.
I was going to ask you if you're going to wear it again.
Yeah, no, I'm not. Yeah. But I'm glad. I love it. This show is a lot of fun right now. So, all right, let's get to my part. I am actually going to be covering, and Laura, I know you remember this, and I think that any child of the 80s remembers it. And it might actually be something that they are have in the back of their minds when they're taking their kids trick-or-treating. I know I certainly had it in the back of mine when Coy was trick-or-treating. He's 20 years old now, so he hasn't gone trick-or-treating in a long time. But it's certainly something that I had in the back of my mind when he was little. So I am going to cover the Halloween candy poisonings. So let's see here. You remember those, right? Like the fear of...
I do.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy.
It got pretty blown up.
It really did. Yeah, it really did. So I got my sources from history.com, CNN.com, DenareBartlett.medium.com, and mentalfloss.com.
Nice.
Yeah. So not a whole lot of sources for either one of us. Well, you kind of, you had a few on yours. Anyway, next week I'm sure I'll have my usual 10. It's fine. So the unquiet spirits, vampires, and zombies that take over American streets every October 31st may think Halloween is all about spooky fun. But what Halloween masqueraders may not realize is that in the early 1970s and well into the next decade, real fear took over. So there were rumors of tainted, poisoned, or otherwise murderous Halloween candy that were being handed out to unsuspecting youngsters. And these rumors are as much a part of the Halloween traditions as costumes and sing-song pleas for sweets. Mm-hmm. So the myth goes like this. No kid is safe on October 31st because psychotic murderers may hand out tainted treats to trick-or-treating children. But is poisoned Halloween candy a terrifying threat or an urban legend? So there are actually no real events that explain this fear. It was driven by social and cultural anxieties. And there's a lesson in that about the power of rumors on this dark day of fantasy. So the Halloween scare began, well, right now it's happening for me with these damn headphones. The Halloween candy scare began in 1970. An op-ed on October 28th, 1970 in the New York Times suggested the possibility of strangers using Halloween's trick-or-treat tradition to poison children. So the editorial mentioned two unconfirmed incidents in upstate New York and offered a series of frightening rhetorical questions. The author, Judy Klemisrud, wondered, for example, if that, quote, plump red apple from the, quote, kindly old lady down the block may have a razor blade hidden inside.
I was going to say, remember the razor blade stuff? That was
like, I do.
It wasn't just poisoning. It was like they were going to put pins or razor blades and
needles, all kinds of crazy shit. Yeah. And I remember when that... Now, the article was written, you know, in 1970. But I remember my mom and my friends' mothers. So, like, Jennifer's mom and Miley's mom... they were all saying, do not take any fruit. Don't take any home-baked goods. Don't take, people right, are handing same. Out that kind of, like, bread. Don't take anything mm-hmm. like that from people.
Right, same.
Yeah, yeah. So, unfortunately, some readers of this op-ed took her questions as definitive fact, which just is going, is still happening today in that people will read something and be like, well, it's in the news. It must absolutely mm-hmm. be true. And, you know, so it's been, going on for a while. But 2 days later, after this article, a five-year-old child actually died on Halloween in Detroit after consuming heroin. Early media reports of his death actually cited his uncle's claim that he had been exposed to the drug in tainted Halloween candy. I had never heard of this story. But by mid-November 1970, newspaper reported showed that the child had in fact found the heroin at his uncle's home, but not right. in his bag of Halloween candy, as investigators had first been told. So, fears of Halloween sadism rise during fearful times, right? Fears of anything, mm-hmm. really. So, for example, paranoia about tainted candy spiked in the early 1980s after the Tylenol poisonings.
I was going to say, like, it seemed like, because that was so, so...
Yes.
Huge of an event mm-hmm. when they were pulling Tylenol off of every shelf, and everyone that had Tylenol mm-hmm. was throwing it away.
Yeah.
Because when we talked about this before in a different episode, you know, I told you I lived outside Chicago at that time and that's where it was happening.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. Yep. So my mom was like, I remember her coming home being like, don't take this, you know, throw it away. And it was all over the news. And yeah. I was scared. And
well, and I remember those capsules that were powder. They were powder. You know what I mean? Instead of the gel tabs or whatever. I remember that. So for those of you who aren't familiar with that, the Tylenol murders, the Tylenol poisonings, were where cyanide-laced acetaminophen was placed on store shelves and sold. The high-profile crime led to the introduction of childproof containers and tough federal laws aimed at punishing those who tamper with over-the-counter drugs. After the Tylenol murders, which are actually still unsolved, warnings about unadulterated Halloween candy increased. Makes sense. While the fears may be overblown, Halloween crimes involving poison have actually occurred. So in 1964, a New York woman named Helen File was arrested for handing out things like ant poison and dog biscuits to kids.
Ooh.
Uh-huh. When questioned, the housewife said she was joking and that she gave the items to kids she felt were too old to be trick-or-treating. Number one, fuck you.
Bitch.
Yeah, right. So, though no children were poisoned during the incident, law enforcement didn't find her actions funny, which, I mean, who would?
Right.
So, the most infamous Halloween poisoning took place on October 31st, 1974, in the case of Timothy O'Brien. Are you familiar with this?
Mm-mm.
No? Okay. So in Deer Park, Texas, like I said, on October 31st, 1974, and here's where we're going to get into a little true crime, Ronald O'Brien called 911 and tells dispatchers that his 8-year-old son, Timothy, has eaten poisoned candy. Ronald and his neighbor, Jim Bates, had taken their children trick-or-treating earlier that rainy evening. At each house, Jim would wait at the sidewalk while Ronald would walk with the kids up to the front door. Mm-hmm. Jim remembered that at one house in particular, the lights were off like nobody was home. So the kids were too impatient to wait around, so they ran ahead to the next house. However, when Jim followed the group of kids, he said that Ronald went around to the corner of the porch where it was too dark to see. In a few minutes, Ronald had caught up with them, and he was holding a handful of large pixie sticks. So, you know, the big-ass fucking... Mm-hmm. Oh, God.
Yeah.
So he was holding a handful of large pixie sticks, which he gave to each of the kids. Ronald had told...
Kid Crack.
Oh, God. In the world... I mean, they're big this big.
Right.
They're huge. I never, ever, ever got one for Koi. Ever. I was bad enough to get the little two, but yeah. Ugh. So Ronald told Jim that the residents of the darkened house had handed him the candy from the side door after the kids had left. Once the group returned home, Ronald gave one of the pixie sticks to a 10-year-old that he recognized from his church. So the only child to eat the pixie stick was his son, Timothy. He had asked to eat the candy right before bed, which if that were me, I'd be like, fuck no, you're not eating a tube full of sugar right before bed. But all right. However, the kid had difficulty opening the package, so his father helped him get it open. Right away, Timothy complained that the candy tasted bitter, so Ronald gave him some Kool-Aid to wash away the taste. Again, just pure sugar drink.
Good parenting.
Timothy then said that his stomach hurt. He then began vomiting and convulsing. That's when his father dialed 911. Timothy's autopsy showed that he had died from cyanide poisoning. He had enough in his system to kill two adults.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. It also showed that the cyanide had come from the pixie sticks. So, news that a young boy had died from poisoned candy immediately sent Deer Park's parents into a panic, obviously. Several of them turned their kids' trick-or-treat candy into the police, fearing it was also poisoned. Police moved quickly to find the other pixie sticks. None of the other kids in their group had eaten theirs, though one boy had tried to, but thankfully he hadn't been able to open the package. Excuse me. Now, tests showed that the tops of the candy's packaging had been cut off, cyanide poured inside, then they had been resealed with a staple. Each of the uneaten candies had enough cyanide in them to kill 3 to 4 adults.
Wow.
Uh-huh. Such careful work done on individual packaging wasn't likely to have been done at the plant or a store. The poisoning had to have been done by someone after they had purchased the candy. So Ronald at first said he couldn't remember where the kids had gotten the pixie sticks. This despite the fact that the group had only gone trick-or-treating on two streets because of the rain. And none of the residents on those two streets had given out pixie sticks to any trick-or-treaters. So on the third trip through the neighborhood, he finally pointed out the house he claimed they had come from. However, the homeowner, an air traffic controller, was quickly ruled out as a suspect thanks to almost 200 witnesses verifying that he was at work at the time. So now Ronald O'Brien was just as quickly becoming the prime suspect in his own son's murder.
Mm-hmm.
Though he was a deacon and sang in the choir at his church, some digging uncovered that Ronald was in some financial trouble. $100,000 worth of debt, for one. He wasn't able to hold down a job for more than a few months. His car was about to be repossessed, and his home foreclosed on. He was in default on multiple bank loans, and he was on the verge of being fired from his job because of suspected theft. So, despite this, his co-workers would later testify that he boasted to them that his finances were about to make a dramatic turnaround. Number one, why are you talking about your finances to your co-workers? But, regardless. So, at the same time, he was becoming very interested in poisons. He asked one of the customers at his job, like a dumbass, about cyanide, because this guy was a chemist. He wanted to know how much would be needed to kill somebody and where to buy it. He even tried to buy cyanide at a chemical supply store in Houston, but changed his mind when he learned the smallest amount he could buy was 5 pounds. 5 pounds of cyanide!
Just for fun.
Yeah, and that was too small. So, just days after it's absolutely insane. Just days after Timothy's funeral, an insurance agent called the police with some troubling information. In January of that year, Ronald had taken out a $10,000 life insurance policy on both of his children. In September, he took out an additional $20,000 on each of them, despite the objections of the agency. Then, just days before Halloween, he took out yet another $20,000 policy on each of his children. The day after Timothy's death, Ronald had called the insurance agency asking how he could collect on those policies. Stand-up guy. When police searched Ronald O'Brien's house, they found his pocket knife with traces of plastic, like that of the pixie sticks, and cyanide on the blade. He was arrested on November 5th, 1974, almost a full year after the murders, with one count of capital murder and 4 counts of attempted murder. No, I'm lying. Not a full year. A week. I was thinking it happened in 73. I'm bad at math.
Gotcha.
Sorry. Even 5 days.
That's right.
So he was arrested with 1 count of capital murder and 4 counts of attempted murder, and he pled not guilty. The case and the trial got national attention, and Ronald began to be known as the Candyman. So on June 3rd, 1975, the jury took only 46 minutes to convict him on all counts. After an equally short deliberation at his sentencing hearing, he was sentenced to death by lethal injection. So, Ronald. Ronald O'Brien was executed for the murder of his son, March 31st, 1984, at the Huntsville unit in Huntsville, Texas, which I think is probably one of the fastest executions from sentencing to execution that I've ever heard of. Never heard of anything.
If anybody's going to do it, Texas will make it happen.
Yeah.
They don't fuck around.
Yeah, for sure. So hundreds gathered outside the prison, cheering and shouting, trick or treat. Some even threw candy at the anti-death penalty protesters that were there. Ronald's execution came a full decade after the poisoning, enough time for the story of little Timothy's death to start moving out of the realm of a tragic family murder and into the realm of an urban legend. So, regardless of how horrific O'Brien's crime was, it was no random act of Halloween havoc, since it was aimed directly at his children and their friends, not at trick-or-treaters in general.
Right. It wasn't, like, just passing it out to everybody.
Right. So, the story of the Houston Candyman killer quickly metastasized. Though it had no evidence, Newsweek magazine asserted in a 1975 article that, quote, over the past several years, several children have died and hundreds have narrowly escaped injury from razor blades, sewing needles, and shards of glass put into their goodies by adults. So, by the 1980s, some communities banned trick-or-treating altogether, while hospitals, and I remember this because they did it in Phoenix, while hospitals in some metropolitan areas offered to X-ray Halloween candy. Did you?
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah, it was like Good Sam, they offered to X-ray Halloween candy. Parent-teacher associations encouraged fall festivals to replace Halloween, and on Long Island, a community group gave prizes to children who stayed home altogether for Halloween 1982. So, in 1982, the governor of New Jersey signed a bill requiring a jail term for those tampering with candy. Worries of One of Laura's kittens has decided to join the party. That's got to be Nancy.
It is.
Hi, Nancy.
One second.
She's gotten so big. Or he.
Escaped.
Okay.
You're welcome. I'm here to, you know.
That was the best.
She didn't take down the whole fucking green screen, so.
Yeah. So if anyone's looking to adopt a cat, that was Nancy. Mm-hmm. We initially thought all the cats were girls, but then things dropped. things happened. That was the best. Sorry, I'm totally... Where the fuck was I? Okay.
Sorry.
so amazing. So worries of parents and community leaders drove the fear. In a popular nationally syndicated newspaper advice column called Ask Ann Landers, remember that one?
Ooh, I do.
Mm-hmm. Landers warned in 1983 of, quote, twisted strangers who had been putting razor blades and poison in taffy apples and other Halloween candy. Mm-hmm. So why did a series of rumors, very loosely based on a small number of tragic crimes, convince so many people in authority and lead to such panic? Well, in the case of the poison candy, research into American politics and horror tales suggests that those fears might have been driven in part by the multitude of problems facing the United States at the time. The years from 1970 to 75 were marked by a cultural upheaval, both domestic and geopolitical. Now, all of the social change in the 1970s fed the creation of urban legends, including one brutal story about strangers with poison candy, or rather, a brutal story about strangers with poison candy seemed a preferable national fantasy to historical reality in the 70s and 80s. I was born in 77, so I was fairly young. Almost throughout the entire 80s. I really don't know. I wasn't paying any attention to, you know.
I just knew I couldn't eat my candy until my mom checked it.
Uh-huh. That's what I knew that, too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, horror at the state of the world can take the form of parody or simple scary stories. Americans have become so disenchanted, according to the journalist of one article, that bleak and frightening films such as 1974's The Exorcist captured the national mood. The false case of the poison candy legend is another way that American fears manifested. It's an easily understood threat to innocence. So, let's talk about those sharp objects that we remember. Not that we remember getting, but that we remember the warnings of. Mm-hmm. Here's what you really should be worried about. And actually really worried about is too strong of a wording. Let's say this is what should mildly concern you. Mm-hmm. So, unlike randomly poisoned candy, there are verified reports of sharp objects being placed in random trick-or-treaters' candy. Fortunately, though, these incidents hardly qualify as an epidemic. In fact, they're really, really rare. So, according to Snopes, which I love that site, according to Snopes, in 1959, there have been around 80 reports of sharp objects adulterating food. The great bulk of those reports turned out to be hoaxes, and even when the stories turned out to be true, the needles or blades were usually placed in the food by a relative or friend who had a really boneheaded idea of a fucking prank.
Right.
Ridiculous. So it's hardly the sort of crazed loners who should be keeping us awake at night, right? Moreover, compared to the cyanide poisonings, and potential downside of biting into a sharp object is fairly low. The worst of these verified reports resulted in someone needing to get a few stitches to close a cut in the mouth. Well, that would certainly be enough to ruin your day, and you should obviously still inspect your child's bag of Halloween candy. It is not quite as terrifying as keeling over with a Jolly Rancher in your mouth.
Right.
Basically. So, had anybody been caught for the needle attacks? Despite decades of parental worry, the first organized attempt to spoil Halloween with sharp objects didn't actually happen until 2000. That year, James Joseph Smith of Minneapolis allegedly stuck needles in the Snickers bars he handed out to trick-or-treaters. While several of the children bit into the tainted or, you know, candy.
The candy with the shit in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. He could hardly claim a huge victim toll. The only injury was to a teenager who was pricked by one of the needles. And even then, he didn't go see a doctor for his relatively small wound. Police charged Smith with one count of adulterating a substance with intent to cause death, harm, or illness. So, was there anything else weird that turned up in Halloween candy? Yeah, kind of. Pot, for instance.
Nice.
So in 2000, parents began finding an odd trick mixed into their children's treats. Snickers wrappers stuffed with marijuana. Police jumped on the case and quickly traced the wacky chocolates back to a homeowner who seemed truly baffled about the whole hullabaloo. Apparently, the police and the homeowner pieced together what happened. The man worked in the dead letter office at a local postal facility. And when he found a bag of Snickers in a lost package, he brought them home to give out as treats. What he didn't know, though, was that the candy bars were actually someone's attempt at smuggling pot through the mail.
That's awesome.
This was my favorite one. I was like, oh my God. So, yeah. They didn't say what happened when they finally traced the person that maybe tried to mail it.
Sent it.
Right, yeah.
Well, did you... There has been stuff on the news recently because, you know, pot now is legalized. We have black pot here in Arizona.
Right.
As in multiple states now.
Yeah.
That people were concerned that somebody was going to take their edibles and pass them out as candy to kids.
Yes.
And, like, and everybody is like, yeah, nobody is going to give away their apples to children.
Right? Why would you?
They're expensive and too, like, it just seems so ridiculous.
It does.
It really was like a big news story, and people were like, oh my God, well, what if that happens? And,
yeah.
You know, again, in that same vein of just kind of causing hysteria where there really is no reason to.
Right, right, exactly. I actually did come across that article, and I'm like, no, I won't put that in. But I'm glad that you brought it up. Yeah, I'm glad that you brought it up. Because that's like just, I guess maybe this time's resurgence of this same fear, it's just with a twist to it. Now, based on current events and things that are actually, you know,
available.
Edibles and, yeah, exactly. Mm. So that is what I have on Halloween, the myths of the Halloween candy poisonings. I do want to say that if you actually are looking for something to fear on All Hallows Eve, you might want to look away from the treat bag and toward the nearest car. Right. Halloween night can be deadly due to DUIs and pedestrian accidents. According to the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, 43% of all Halloween fatalities between 2011 and 2013 involved a drunk driver. So,
absolutely,
that's where the fear should lie. And that...
I always get those glow-in-the-dark things and stick them all around.
Oh, yeah, for sure. For sure. And we didn't actually carry the glow-in-the-dark sticks until we were maybe in junior high.
Right.
Really?
No, My parents would take, like, a flashlight.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, we never walk us around.
Yeah, we never did that either. Yeah. But we did live in apartments for a long time until I got older. Then we started trick-or-treating around Miley's neighborhood. She lived over on 12th Street in Northern area.
Mm-hmm.
So we always went around that entire neighborhood. But anyway...
Nice.
That is that. But I do remember checking Coy's candy, even. Like, it was just something that was, you know.
It's ingrained in you. Like, I'll still check zines, even after we just talked about this. I'll still check it.
Exactly.
When it comes around.
Yeah, because, you know, better safe than sorry. Really, exactly. I think. But at the end of the day, it's really just more of a myth and urban legend than, like, a legitimate concern. But it, I think it's responsible parenting to check, because you never fucking know. Like, that one guy was sticking needles into Snickers bars.
That's true.
Yeah.
I also think that the satanic panic that was so prevalent in the 80s added to that, because, you know, Halloween was kind of evil, and, you know, bad things can happen, and then, you know, you had, like, all of that going on where everybody was so afraid of
for
that
sure.
as well. And that kind of, I think, fed into it, too. Like, well, Satanists are going to be, you know, try to harm your kids on Halloween because it's their special day.
They're going to inject blood into your candy bars. Right.
They're going to use AC/DC backwards.
Right. I love Halloween. I think it is the best. I love dressing up. I love getting candy. I'm really looking forward to Halloween in my new house. There's a lot of kids that live in this, in our neighborhood, and... I think it's just going to be, you know, I think it's just going to be a really fun time. So I'm super excited. Super excited.
I'm excited for
you. You are moving Halloween weekend.
I am. I, actually have a wedding to go to earlier in the day, which is kind of strange, but, and then I'll be taking Zane around and passing out candy. Same as usual.
That'll be so fun. What do we know what Zane is going to be this year? Is he going to be a priest?
Some sort of... No, but how cute would that be?
Right?
No, he's going to be some sort of a soldier thing.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's like very
ninja,
cool.
Look at... I don't know.
A ninja soldier?
I don't know. It's something soldiery. That's it. That's all I know.
Yeah.
That's what he loves.
Yeah. So, anyway, that is it for us, guys. That is the history of Halloween. And I want to... I have a... great little strange history for us, guys. So, time for strange history, in where I find a funny story and I read it at the end of every episode. This week's is the best. So this one is entitled Kids on History. And since we're talking about Halloween and trick-or-treaters, and this is Kids on History. These are actual answers to questions on students' tests submitted to education websites by frazzled teachers. Question, what was Sir Walter Raleigh famous for? Answer, he invented cigarettes and started a craze for bicycles. Okay. What is a fossil? A fossil is an extinct animal. The older it is, the more extinct it is. Not really wrong, but a little askew. Right. Name the wife of Orpheus, whom he attempted to save from the underworld. Answer, Mrs. Orpheus.
Also not wrong.
Also not wrong. question, what ended in 1896? Answer, 1895. These are the best. Name one popular queen. Answer, Freddie Mercury.
I'm waiting to hear a wrong answer so far.
So far, none of them are wrong. None of them are wrong. Name one of the Romans' greatest achievements. Answer, learning to speak Latin. I thought you could really appreciate that.
Thank you.
Question, where was the Declaration of Independence signed? Answer, at the bottom. And that is what we have for Strange History. I was like, these are all perfect, and I love them so much. So, anyway, Laura, excuse me. God, will you please tell everybody where they can follow us at?
You can follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at HOH Podcast. And on the TikTok at HOH Podcast, at HOH Carrie, and at HOH co-host Laura.
You sure can.
Mm-hmm.
And that is it, guys. That is what we have on this Halloween episode. We hope that you have a wonderful, wonderful Halloween. We hope that you are being very, very safe. We hope that you are checking your children's Halloween candy. And we are hoping that you are not going to go out and drink and drive. Please, please, please be careful. Don't do that. It's not necessary. There are Ubers. There are Lyfts. There are guys.
Bicycles. Well, don't do a bicycle either.
You can walk. Hey, walk. Walk the shit off. Or stay home and hand out candy. So to that end, Laura and I want to say happy Halloween. Thank you so much. We love you guys. We hope you're having a really wonderful night. And I want to say stay safe out there, because you never know who
or what
is listening or climbing up the back of your chair.
This is true. It does happen.
Watch for those climber uppers. Bye, guys. We will see you next week with a brand new episode.
Bye.